Another chance if anyone has something to share or ask.
Teachings also seem to invite us to look to see if we can find. And what can give us the agency to look for that? Because we're looking for something which doesn't exist, which is not there.
Well, we don't know yet if it's not there. Or if it is there. So that would be one where we can use that as an example, and then we can keep feeling into your question. Even I'm curious who, okay, I'm curious who wants to be right, and then I'm curious who could look. And maybe we can feel sort of the feet of the curiosity. Like, it could be another question, whose curiosity? What is that movement? And also a kind of flash, peripheral vision, kind of, maybe there isn't somebody who wants to be right. Maybe there's a cramp. But also a flash that, but there, it's not that there's nothing or no, there's not exactly nobody. Two kinds of flash. Our curiosity opens and we're kind of open enough that then peripheral vision, we can catch a glimpse of our experience, which isn't here or there. Any of it isn't here. The curiosity also, what? But we do get a glimpse of something that's not filtered through any assumption. That's the main thing I wanted to say. Somehow, we're trying to look and trying to feel who is looking also, or and it's sort of like, wait, almost not even in peripheral vision, it's even almost behind that we kind of, and maybe it could be as where there could be friendliness with it all, which then takes apart our normal way of questioning. Because friendliness with wanting to be right, even. A no problem relationship with. And then that's different from our normal pointed question. And a sense of another way of directly knowing something real, directly knowing reality somehow, even though I want to see it here, but I feel it here. And then any statement isn't quite true. The statement that there's not a self isn't quite true. The statement that there is a self isn't quite true. Now,
the rest may have dissolved from
it. Oops.
I could say what I was going to say.
Okay.
Which was that that it feels like a sense of limbo or being suspended. You can't quite go back to believing that there is this centric reference order. But also you have none of the tools you think you might use seem to be relevant. You can't do it with your mind because your mind already believes it.
Mm.
You can't do it with effort because that it'll almost recede from effort.
Mm.
That was all there.
There's I think it's even relevant, the back story. We did an online retreat in February. A few people were there together with me, February, 3 days. And one woman who is Spanish, lives in London, just today, through some miracle, a message came from her today. Remembering one phrase from a text from the Buddha in one of those days. Stay steady there. And she was telling me how that had unfolded. That came today. And that's teaching of, I think it's in the Buddhist text, but I think it's actually one of Buddha's students teaching someone else who's in a limbo like that. Feeling where we try and we don't believe and which is also like we don't buy into the programming so much, lose our taste for that a bit. And the teaching was stay steady there. Sensing where that the beginning movement of even practice had some intention that got us there. And that intention somehow also is too much of a trick or too small or too doesn't make sense from here. And that's where the beauty of that, we're not making it up. What is has a chance then? Just stay steady there. We stay steady there. Disbelieving even why I got here to limbo. Disbelieving the thinking that got that to happen. And just laying down all the tricks, it's not like now we need a more subtle trick, just really what if no trick? So I wanted to give a title. I didn't give titles much the last few years, but this retreat we're getting titles somehow. That which is Be the Beauty. And it's sort of inspired partly by, I think it's maybe Gandhiji, or people say it is so that it sounds good. Be the change you want to see in the world. But it's Be the Beauty. Partly because of that change. So how do we know what to change and when and in what way? And how do we know it's really change, basically? How do we know we're not just doing the same violence again in the name of, like everybody else, the good, the right? And we've talked this week about being in experience of beauty and how it feels physically, and letting that ripple through. Just like, so Vera this morning was saying, she was joining and enjoying breath, quiet, and then unquiet programming, and then the thought that she was uncomfortable rippled through the body and made uncomfortable the body and mind. Also the other way, the ripples from being in the beauty are just a simple experience of, that's beautiful, even though it's programmed. Let's not be picky for now. Even though we're programmed to say a flower is beautiful, to think that, but it does ripple through in an experience that's more like an opening than the gossip. And then we can play with letting it be even more of an opening, so that we can even be moved by the beauty of the flower or the cloud or whatever, and then feel that actually it's just itself. It's not actually special, but still feeling that openness that happened, rippling through. It's a kind of respectfully that the cloud doesn't have to be, it's not required to mean beauty. The flower is not required to have the limited meaning equals beauty. It has all its many meanings. It's bigger than the idea of beauty. Because we start to be able to feel then, not sort of idea bumping against idea, we actually can feel real relationship with flower. So it's actually respectfully, let's say, what if not beautiful? Still this much openness. And to kind of find an Aikido way. So where the force of the negativity is its own undoing. The force of that unwillingness to be in real relationship. We want it to just stay idea flower, idea beauty, not experience that actually comes inside me deeper than my name. And to feel where we so much of our energy would like to be respectable in whatever way. So in the subculture, getting disrespect from certain people might be respectable. It's not necessarily like about a tie, a certain kind of silk tie or whatever. Thais are very funny to me since I haven't spent much time in the West. So funny to come from India and see all these people. And to feel where we can kind of have really a seat that fits our behind in respectful rather than respectable first, respectful first. And I'd like to, if only I could be like Kabir, it feels like it could be a song. This possibility of being the beauty, also the body. So we all know that the ideals of body now are a sickness. We know that mentally, and still the advertising is still allowed to be everywhere. And living away from billboards and stuff, TVs and everything, and then going just for a brief time into the city, I still have the chance to see the how silly and deadly, because it's so not normal. And having the chance to be in nature with fox and eagle and mouse, and then have a dose of culture. But instead of it being like, oh, kind of their problem or an untouchable, unworkable situation, that there's that sickness in the mainstream culture. That's a machine that even eats up those that have that body. And just spits them out on the heroin lane. Next. Just so to just simply be the beauty. Of your body. To be in that juicy, whatever shape it is. With less and less of, ooh, do I have permission? It's only the last 50 years that it's been like that. That starved. And we're only missing some examples. Few examples of few moments in anybody's body that they're being the beauty, from the inside being the beauty. And it's catching. It can sound impossible. It would have sounded impossible to me. But the impossible keeps happening all the time, like those trees sending up. It's not liters, but thousands of gallons of water. I still don't have the number. Thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons of water every day going out through every single oak tree. And being in nature can really be great to feel how each shape of each tree so perfectly itself as a kind of role model. It's also kind of catching like a wildfire inside, like a little bit of it can lead to more and more enjoying just I sense disbelief in the room. This talk is partly inspired by a question that someone asked in a note, how to be with the suffering in the world, in others. And we've partly talked about it, but not so directly. We've talked about how discovering practice is not an only inner thing. And we've talked about kindness, which is not a self-contained sort of experience. The body also, being the beauty in the body, it's not only about the shape of it. It's not only about the way it moves or the way it shines. But to start with, if we can play with an image of if the body could be a bit like a pet, that we train a bit with love so that we can live together well. And especially that the body isn't so habituated to being comfortable all the time, as much as possible, as sort of its main purpose in life. Let there not be that confusion for the body, that its purpose is towards being comfortable whenever possible, as a first choice. It's not towards being uncomfortable either. But something in the body that actually likes to feel the rain or the cold or the hot for a while. One of my teachers feels cold so easily. And so whenever I go to India, it'll bring one more layer of Western sort of silk long underwear or fluffy coat or wool hat. And then it's time to get more, the next round again, 10 years later, and sleeping bag, fluffy coat. And he wears it all for about 2 months of the year because there's not really heating. The houses are made for the hot season to be bearable. And so it's almost unbearable in wintertime. And on purpose, he will not repair the window that got crashed in a windstorm. And so there's also cold air coming through. Not that it was much kept out by that window, but and he has kids. It's not like he's just a monk or something. And I was like, well, I'm going to call the window guy, you know. I said, yeah, okay. But, you know, I don't want the kids, you know, if it would someday happen that there's not hot water every day and the body is requiring hot water every day. And I was like, okay, I'll call the window guy next week. So partly that the body does sometimes like a certain sense of wildness. And also the body likes to come along for those moments that happen. That emerge, where there's a real meeting with life or with someone or with ourselves. And yeah, the ground is cold and uncomfortable. Is that going to end the love story so soon? Does that make sense? So just the burdensome effect of so much comfort and convenience. As if that's normal. As if it's purely good. Like it's, you know, they measure that. They actually call it quality of life, but they measure it. So it's actually quantity. Quantity of something. Convenience. And they compare by country. The quantity of convenience, and it's named quality of life. So being the beauty of wildness, and that's where we leave that metaphor of the pet body behind, because if it could be more like actually a wild animal, this body, it would be so good. We would be much less afraid. And it feels like kind of the mind to take that possibility in. That not a domesticated animal. What about the body as more about being a wild animal? One example of how fear can go down the drain into the earth and be released as life energy free. In more close to wild animal body. Different things that have happened in my life mean that it's easy for me to feel afraid if I'm alone somewhere that people could get to, but no one could hear me if I got in trouble. And that I live in a place, that's where I live now. I live somewhere people can get to, and no one would hear me. And a friend was there who is a bit wild. Not so interested in respectable, and especially respectful of trees. So he came to visit one time. He had stayed to live and work in the place that I live in Spain. And he came back. And before tea, he's not British, but still, before tea, he went first to go to all the trees to meet them and feel how they were. First, then we would sit down in the living room and have tea. So he's a bit wild, which was really good and helpful for me. Because then I went away for the winter to India and I came back, and just by the way, one time, other conversation, mostly probably about the trees. By the way, one winter afternoon, a bunch of guys with their drinks came and parked on our land, which is in a nature preserve, and did their thing. And he could feel in the nature and in himself something was coming, and then they came. And he could just feel to just stay in his little stone cottage there and tuned, but not like to go tell them to move on or anything, just stay. There was danger, and it was fine, and it was fine, and then they left. Which is great. There was no tragedy. Just to hear that possibility of feeling something coming, staying tuned, and the possibility that tragedy doesn't happen. Because my system was tuned to tragedy must happen. Every time. And I keep being surprised over the years when I learn again and again in different ways. It doesn't always happen. Many, many times it doesn't happen. On TV, the lion always gets the gazelle because that team has waited for 3 months to get that shot. through so many boring technical failures and missed catches. The boa constrictor, I have another friend, for months and months will not touch the rat. Put the rat next to her, she doesn't care. She mildly disregards the rat. And then one day she's hungry and the rat is gone. But months and months and months, it's like the rats have way better chance than I thought. And so being into that wildness beauty of the body that's got like these deep roots that tendril into other roots to feel what we need to know. And so we've been researching what can be known, and out of all of that can be known, what needs to be known or what would be good to know. And one is what to practice, in what way to practice. And especially if we can fold that word practice all the way out, we've said it before, but what to practice, what to put into practice, what can we do practically in our lives, which is not a just me. That doesn't exist. There's nowhere any person ever who was just a me. And so to start with our parents, because that's for sure where we can just absolutely say, even if then I was abandoned in the woods and it was just a me, there were parents. And how to live with the suffering of our parents. How to find relationship with those two people, dead or alive. The how-to that we might think of in the normal way, like the day-to-day flow, is not really as much of interest to me. That could be that you never see them again, and that's how you find real relationship. So I'm not talking about living nose to nose necessarily. But there are some very helpful kind of moves from a field of work called Family Constellations that I highly recommend you check out if you want, that recognizes how unresolved, maybe we can even use the word karma, because we're talking about being practical, and karma just means action. That's all it means. So we're talking about, in a way, action. And can we know how to act, what to act, in what way, from where, for what? So, unresolved action in our bloodline. Not necessarily only parents, but unresolved. It gets passed down mysteriously. People that we don't know their story come somehow under the carpet into our action. So there are somehow, it often seems to be uncles who've died, for example, great uncles, on a certain date, and that same date, just feeling suicidal. Didn't know about the uncle, etc. So it's mysterious, and just an encouragement to check it out. but something we can play with in our silence already today without the use of any technology. We don't need to turn anything on. It's just inviting a meeting, if you wish, with a parent and then another parent in your mind. Deep eyes to deep eyes. And feeling, and they just get to total basics. They gave you your life. No matter what else happened, they gave you your life. And in a way, anything else they gave you that you don't want, that you've taken as your responsibility especially, our proper action is giving that back. Giving it back. Which is respectful. It recognizes that not only does my taking it on not help anybody, though the surface layer may act as if to require me to suffer with you, as if out of sympathy. But actually, respectfully, I recognize you, mother, you, father, your capacity to hold your own karma, whatever it may be. Respectfully, I recognize your capacity. And I give you what your capacity can take. And I ask for your blessing. And they do like a bow. Thank you for my life. I give you what is yours. And I ask for your blessing. It's a sense of I am small and you are big in a really healthy way. Usually when we feel small around a parent or parent-like, a person that we're relating to as if a child, usually there's some way under the carpet that we're taking on responsibility. We feel small because we're taking on. So it's a paradox, yeah? It's good to check it out. When you feel small, is there some way you're feeling responsible for something that's not yours? And that's why you can't, it's like, what do I, how do I, can't, oh. And then this can spread out with friends, with workplace people, with everything. Everything is a relationship. Could be, if we're lucky. There could be real relationship and not my idea of you and your idea of me kind of bonking. Dead and dead. And that respectfully giving back what's your responsibility, also with a friend. Because I can feel, and now I actively tune into your capacity rather than into your problem. So I disengage from my way of relating to you as being this person with this problem that you can't handle. Which means I disengage from non-acceptance. I disengage from violence, actually. The demand, the violence, that of relating to you as your problem, as your weakness, as your terrible situation. And I feel, to me, it feels like underneath a spark. But it's not just for a second, a spark that's ongoing. Your capacity. And that helps me actually see how, yes, terrible problem, and what else? beauty and intensity, gifts, resources, and also needs. Not packaging someone into like a plastic cell. Oh, you've got the capacity to deal with your shit. So I'll just be over here safely. It's actually then a real meeting. And that's a space that, as Krishnamurti says, then there is space. There's a vast space. And he says, only in that much space can something new come. And something new is what's needed, usually.
So you're tuning into or feeling the capacity, the spark.
Your spark feels their spark.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. So and then the sense of, so there's a kind of trust that they have the capacity to deal with what they have.
There's a sensing of capacity.
Okay. And then the sensing of the needs.
Yeah. So feel in your voice, when you said the word needs, you went up
mm-hmm.
to a different level that's the complicated, problematic level. And then need is life's need, which life takes care of. And basically need is like to meet and be met in capacity, which means respectfully. Because that spark then is creative.
So you, for example, you your spark feels our sparks and sees that, or
yeah.
Sees needs.
Okay, it's this deeper need, the use of the word need for something deeper than what we would usually think of as my needs. It's so often our actual need we're completely unaware of. And then when there's space, a movement towards just giving more space, for example. And so yesterday we talked about, it was like, just giving up and like, eh. And actually that giving up moment gave room for a movement of deep care without the emotion of care. That's like a need being met, Tara-like. It is almost like another dimension happening at the same time that we practice tuning into, getting the hang of, and feeling what's my preference and my what's the other word? The opposite of preference, what I don't like. Is there a word?
Dislikes.
My dislikes. And how that just is another thing. The one example that's coming to my mind, I don't know, but I'll try. So discovery of need is discovery of another dimension sounds like Star Trek or something, but a different tuning in to our same world where it is as if different laws function. So let me give us a different example first, like an area to explore. Again, like we could meet, and because I care about you so much, then I'm worried. I'm so worried about Sophie. And then my worry also is like gripping your whatever difficulty. And my worry has left my seat of respectfulness. And partly because we think it's respectable to be worried about someone's problem, to join them in their suffering, literally. To join them in their disconnection, literally. Let's disconnect together. And then you could feel something that gets confirmation that actually you don't really want to feed the poor me or whatever thing, whatever version of me and my problem. And you feel that I want you to change first. Then I can settle back. And otherwise, it's like there's problems. And so there's a feeling of like there's a pool. We're in a nice pool of water, safe water somehow. And maybe we're leaning on something and talking. And just with our legs, we can feel around in the water for just while we're talking. We're really talking, and something else is moving the legs around, exploring, finding some space. And that's a little bit that where my intention is there to let's listen together. Let's listen to life together. And also something that doesn't even trust that much intention, even good intention, is able to move my legs around and feel a bigger space that is like calling in the teachers. Sometimes we may have, I have several major teachers in my life. Some of them no longer alive. Some of them I haven't seen, one of them I haven't seen in decades. It doesn't occur to me, like he's still alive teaching. But it's as if he has an altar in my body. Sometimes when I get a glimpse of how, like the stature of my teachers. It's unbelievable. And then, like, with my leg while we're talking, the teachers show us how big a human can be, what a human being can be. And then that kind of, it's not me, not me, but it's definitely here. It's mysterious. And so then it's also, it's like, not only out of nowhere can come some new. But maybe also some realization that in some way that's not separate, the teachers, the spiritual ancestors. At least I can be a bridge to that. Okay, so this kind of clunky example of need. I have two kids who will just, it'll be like a little riff on need. Having the two kids be my kids is and was intensively at the beginning and continuing deep tissue massage of understanding that it's not about me. Not about my needs so much. The needs I thought I had. The little bit whiny needs. And also, it can't be not about my needs, because at a certain point, I'm just broken. So the instrument has to have enough care. Not too tight, not too loose strings, etc. To take care of the actual needs that are obvious. And so part of that is the having kids, is that when I travel for retreat and they stay with my ex-partner, happily, hardly will say hello on the phone. Oh, mommy, don't go, when are you coming back? Who? What? But I cut my travel time as close as I can. It's a long way to the airport, so I can get flights only leaving at a certain time, so I can get there the same day. No extra night away from home is allowed by me, my own sense of the situation. And this trip, I put in an extra day because of, I thought, I'm in Totnes, and I haven't, Christopher has been an important person in my life. I wouldn't be teaching without his asking to. So I haven't seen him in a few years. I should see him. That makes sense, and that seems to be okay with everybody in the family. So we'll book the flight. Not the day the retreat ends. And then I mentioned the other day, and now a few times, that a friend died Saturday night. And it's strange because he's English. I've never met him in England. I've only met him in India. And as an afterthought of this week-long retreat, which could be this week only because that was the only week anything was available where we could be for this retreat. So here we are. Because the barn was full and whatever else was full. So here we are. And that's why it's these dates, as far as we know. And oh, well, by the way, what if we do, Caroline asked, what if we do a day long the day before? Sunday, last Sunday, a week ago. Yeah, all right. I think that'll be okay with the kids. One day more. Since so many friends couldn't come to this week, that we can meet them on Sunday. So then there we were Sunday, seemingly randomly, by the way, at Ben's school, my friend's school, where he went. We're doing a retreat the day, hours after he died. We're in a silent retreat all day in his school. That's kind of along the lines of need that I'm talking about. And then this extra day that I had, that I thought was extra, just one morning, resting or meditation, there was space so that there could be a shift in the mind to realize I can just lose that train ticket and get that ride and get that train ticket, and I can go be with Ben's partner and daughter on Tuesday. Not like, when could I get a flight again and come back? And it's like, oh. The equations simplify, or whatever that's called. What is that called? When the equations into something simpler. There's a word.
Synchronicity.
No, but in math, in mathematics. I'm not the only one. Simplify? Okay. Simplifying the equation, yeah. Life simplifies the equation. And sometimes we know, like, in advance, let me book that day extra to see Emma. And sometimes we don't know. And yet, what needs to be available can be available and can happen, can fall into place.
Trust.
Yes, good word. Trusting the wildness of the body, trusting the what?
No, I didn't know it was going to die.
Oh, sorry. When despair for the world grows in me, this is Wendell Berry, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life or my children's lives. Maybe. I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in its beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water. And I feel above me the day blind stars, waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. May all beings live freely. Given. To no purpose. May our practice and lives be dedicated to the momentum of liberation of human being for all, including ourselves.